Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. This weekend is going to be the D-Day Conneaut reenactment. That's August 17th and 18th in Conneaut, Ohio, on Lake Erie in Ashtabula County. In fact, this is one of the world's largest D-Day reenactments. They're in their 20th year or so of activity up there with D-Day Conneaut. It's grown over the years. I think it began with just about 12 reenactors running up the beach in Conneaut, Ohio, some 20 years ago, and it's grown now to 1,200 reenactors. Both U.S., British, French, and German troops will participate, and also there'll be flyovers, there will be landings, there will be battle reenactments. And here to talk with us about it a little more in detail is one of the organizers of the event. His name is Eric Montgomery, and he actually heads up the veterans engagement for the day. And this really was what I was most excited about myself personally, loving to talk to these World War II vets and to hear their stories personally. So they have the veterans tent. They have a lunch for them. Of course, they have premier seating for them in the gallery for the reenactments. It's a wonderful time for our veterans, and Eric does a lot of work with this. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate this very much.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. This is such a great event in the state of Ohio and actually really in the country. There's none like it that I'm aware of. In fact, the only other reenactment of this scale actually takes place in Normandy. I was encouraged to see that French young people are beginning to take on the legacy of that history. In recent years, they've been conducting reenactments there in France in Normandy, taking on the roles of the British, the French, and German troops to reenact the D-Day. But this really is the most premier reenactment anywhere in the world. Last year, I was stunned to see the kind of equipment and all the uniforms, and actually the whole town, looks like, came out dressed like the 1940s. And you really felt like you were back there in 1944 all over again. It really is an experience. That last year was my first time. We're coming again this year, bringing family and friends. We're very much looking forward to it. Tell us how you got involved with D-Day Conneaut.
Well, I began reenacting in 2003, and my first event was actually a Battle of the Bulge event at Fort Indian Gap, Indian Town Gap, Pennsylvania. And there were quite a few reenactors there at the time. I would say about 1,600, all barracking in vintage World War II barracks that they had erected prior to the war. And, of course, just recently they started tearing a lot of them down, which was a real shame. But that was my first taste of reenacting. And the high for the day, much like it was in 1944 for the guys that fought in the Battle of the Bulge, the high for the day was 3 degrees, and it gave you a really good flavor of being a historical impressionist or reenactor or a living historian, whatever you want to call us. But because we're wearing the same type of clothing that they wore, if not the same clothing, the foot gear, for example, those guys had trench foot, and many of them lost their toes. I can understand why, and even though we were only out there, maybe for 6 hours running around trying to, find Hansel and Gretel. And that's a little term that we have for the German reenactors. But, it really gave you a very good flavor of what these guys endured for weeks at a time. And then later that summer, in fact, D-Day Conneaut at that time was taking place in September. And after a number of years, I got involved with the management of the organization. I've been a part of I don't want to call it the hierarchy, but the strategic planning people since 2008. And my passion is driven solely for the veterans, because my family is a group of veterans, and 12 fellows in my family served in World War II. and the only one that was killed on June 6, 1944, on Omaha Beach. And so I've studied his life, battalion. He was in the Navy. He was actually part of the ground forces, what they call the Beach Battalion. And those guys, their primary function on D-Day was to be traffic cops and bring the landing craft into secured areas that were free of mines and obstacles. And that was another part of their unit, was the free mines and obstacles. And communications, which was basically signal flags, a small boat motor repair. So if a LCVP or a landing craft vehicle personnel, one of those small boats that you see on Saving Private Ryan when they're taking a you know, a platoon of men in, 33 guys, if that if the ramp wouldn't go up properly after they landed or the prop was afoul, these guys in the Navy under fire would repair the boats so they can go out there and get more guys. And then the last part of it was hydrographic, as I mentioned, clearing mines and obstacles and communications, but also medical. And these guys were the aid stations on the beach, you know, and helping the soldiers and sailors who were wounded be taken out to hospital ships and troop ships so they can get better care in England. But in 2008, this event was really ready to collapse. And there were three key people, the current CEO, Betsy Bayshore is her name, Lisa Torrey, who is now Lisa Mertzky, and myself, all kind of had a powwow together and said, what are we going to do to keep this event alive? And we come up with some strategies. And one of the things that we became at that point was a 501(c). And from that time, D-Day Conneaut has taken off from just a couple of hundred reenactors in 2008 to over 1,800 that signed up for this year's event. So the numbers were a little bit off in your description, but, you know, you have, as you mentioned, Chris, you have representatives of Great Britain, Canada, a large contingent of fellows from Canada, and they bring, you know, there's some Canadian women as well that portray their version of the wasps and waves that we had in the U.S. But we also have the Polish, as you mentioned, the French, Free French, the German, of course. You got to have somebody to fight if you're going to have a reenactment. And of course, the U.S. from regular infantry, airborne infantry. We don't have any parachute drops because we just don't have the land to do it. But and of course the U.S. Navy. So you know, and there's the Navy being the beach battalion, the guys in the watercraft that are manning the boats, and then of course the Seabees who were building airfields and whatnot after the invasion. So it's become a huge event. And we estimate that there's probably 30,000 people that come to this event over the two-day span. And, you know, the best part about this event, and this is the magic word that everyone wants to hear, is it's free. And, you know, how do you raise money for an event that of this scope and this scale? And believe me, when we first started, Betsy, Lisa, and myself, you know, the budget was about $6,000, which most of that going to insurance. So if somebody got hurt or whatever, that the event was protected. We spent last year about $172,000 for our event. And if you came out to see it, you could see where you would spend that money, because we've got planes in the air, boats in the water, tanks on the ground, and a lot of soldiers and sailors and airmen and unfortunately, I can't say Marines, because there was very few in the Normandy invasion. But there were there. But we don't have any big battleships that they can lounge upon. But to make a long story short, the veterans program, the formal veterans program, I started in 2012. We had about 50 veterans, 50 World War II veterans that came to the event. We had a speaking program in the morning and a veterans luncheon in the afternoon. and the guys loved it. And I love working with them because all my uncles are dead. And I look at these guys as my uncles. They are truly, you know, part of my family because,
that's right.
Like I said, all mine are gone. That
yep.
veterans program has reached its crescendo for World War II men 2 years ago. I had 247 World War II veterans at this event that either came on Friday or came on Saturday. And throughout the whole entire world, I can't think and I don't know of another event that has as many World War II veterans in any given one spot in time than D-Day, Ohio. And with that being said, you know, it's something that I work very, very hard at all year round. You know, interviewing veterans, talking to veterans, encouraging them to come, you know, because some are apprehensive and they saw things that are unmentionable to especially their family because they want to protect them. They could tell somebody like me with no problem whatsoever, but their own kids don't know one or two stories, if that, from their dad, who were in Normandy or at Iwo Jima or Okinawa or the Battle of Southern France or Sicily or Salerno. They want to protect their children from the horrors of war. And here we are 70 years later, Chris, and these guys are coming out. They're sharing their stories. They're reliving the moment. And their transformation is not a 90-year-old man or a 100-year-old man that comes to the event. They are 18-year-old boys reliving those moments again. And that's, to me, is the most joyful thing of watching the veterans program and what it is and how we treat them with dignity and respect. And they can go home and they never come back to the event ever again. But they know that their legacy is going to be held for the next generation. And God, I hope that, you know, somebody takes my place where I can't do it anymore. And they have the same passion for our Korean War and Vietnam War veterans. And of course, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and everything in between. And with that, you know, being said, I'll give the mic back to you. I've sat and blabbed on here for 5 minutes, but, you know, this is something that I could talk about all day long.
Well, we're talking with Eric Montgomery. He is one of the organizers of D-Day Conneaut, a wonderful historical event coming up this weekend on the shores of Conneaut, Ohio on Lake Erie. And the dates are August 17th and 18th. It's a free event for the whole family. You don't want to miss this. You know, Eric, last couple of years, I've become aware of this event, and I'm a history buff, as anyone can tell you. And of course, our organization is working on placing FDR's D-Day prayer in its entirety at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. We actually got the legislation passed in 2014 and signed by the president. We're now raising the funds and working with the planning commissions as to where it will be placed at the memorial in the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. And like you, this is a living legacy to go on and on, to tell the story of the sacrifices that were made for our freedom. And what you're doing in Conneaut, Ohio, with all the folks that are coming to reenact the Battle of D-Day, is really a living history come to life. Folks, you don't want to miss this. Last year, of course, you had six tanks, you had half tracks, you had trucks. All this is authentic equipment that has been refurbished and put back into reenactments. You had flyovers. You had one of the last working 88 artillery pieces. That thing is one of the modern marvels. When it went off, the whole town knew it. And actually, I brought with me a pastor friend of mine. He was like a big kid. We were up there on the bluffs overlooking the battle reenactment scenes. And I'll tell you, he's coming again this year. He's bringing some men from his church. He was all enthralled with it. I'm bringing one of my son-in-laws. His dad is coming, and my son and I are coming. He actually served in the 82nd Airborne in Iraq with three different deployments. He's coming. He's actually considering becoming a reenactor of World War II. And of course, both his Uncle Ninny, who served in World War II and was wounded in the Battle of Ardennes. He's a Purple Heart recipient. My father served in the Pacific. He passed on 4 years ago, and he served in the Battle of Okinawa all the way to the surrender of the Japanese in Tokyo Harbor. And so, like you, when I talk to these veterans, one of my favorite places to go up to the tent and the assembly of the World War II veterans and veterans that you've assembled, thank you for what you're doing. It's a real honor to these men. I had an opportunity, a privilege, to talk to a man who served on the U.S. Tennessee, a Pearl Harbor survivor who was actually on the ship when it was being bombed by the Japanese, and then saw it refitted and put back into service, and actually was in one of the most hellacious sea battles of World War II between battleships, Saratoga Straits, and he was in that battle and telling me about that. I talked to men who served with General Patton in the Third Army. Never had an opportunity. I thought most of those guys were gone, but there they were. They were at Geneva on the Lake at D-Day Conneaut. Again, folks, that's happening this Friday and Saturday, all day, August 17th and 18th. You don't want to miss this. Now, Eric, what's the program you have planned for the veterans? How many World War II veterans have registered to come to the event this weekend?
I have 141 World War II veterans, coupled with their brothers from the Korean conflict and what I call the Korean era. There's 69 of those. So altogether, a little over 210 veterans that are coming to D-Day, Ohio. And, of course, it's in Conneaut Township Park. And so not to confuse your listeners, Geneva on the Lake is a little bit further down the road. But Conneaut Township Park is basically in the middle of Route 531 and Route 7. So that's the neighborhood that you need to get to. But
so when they come on Route 90, when they come on Route 90, what route do they get off of
Route
at the
7.
Exit there? Route 7. We'll take and
Route
drive
7.
Right north, and it will get you right to the park and down there on the lake in Conneaut.
Yeah, I encourage your listeners to go out to the website. The website is D-Day Ohio, all one word, DDAYOHIO.US, and look at the schedule page. And also there's a travel page as well. It gives you a lot of helpful hints, but it will show you where the public parking is. And there's no parking at the event site. It's just grown to the point where, you know, every bit of grass is called for and or it's accounted for. And the so we have to remotely bring people in from parking lots that are outside the event proper. And that's free as well. So the event has a pretty good expense in hiring buses to bring people in. And they shuttle people back and forth all day long. But for the
I was just going to tell, when folks get there, though, and they'd like to make a contribution, there are some folks with some buckets. There are some donation barrels when you get to the facility. Please do throw a contribution in there for this wonderful reenactment to continue for the years to come, to be a living history to our young people and to the next generation. Go ahead, Eric.
Absolutely. And there's merchandise that the event also makes as well. And I'm involved with the patches, the pins, and the coins. And every year, for the last 10 years, I've designed the challenge coin, which we sell at the event, and it tells a particular story of the Normandy invasion. So next year will be the last one that I produce for the event. We're, you know, deciding on what we're going to do next. But it's been a pretty good ride, and you know, I spent a lot of time on it. But let's just talk briefly about the veterans program, if you don't mind. Is that okay, Chris?
Please.
Okay, the veterans program. Obviously, when the fellows are seeing these combat scenarios that we're putting together and all the equipment they've had and the smell of the musty smell of the wool, it brings back a lot of memories. And many of the veterans are willing and able and eager to tell their own story. And unfortunately, I have so many of them, but only so much limited time. But that whole veterans oratory begins at 10:30 in the morning on Friday. And that goes to almost the noon hour. And that oratory program features veterans of D-Day. That is a question and answering session. And the way I run the program, and I've seen this happen in so many other different avenues of, you know, when you have veterans and they get in front of a mic and people ask oddball questions. And we don't need to go into what they are. But I want to protect the veterans so they don't have to justify their actions, because, you know, let's be honest, war is war. And the inevitable outcome is in cemeteries all the way throughout France and in Europe, even in our own country. There is a question and answering session, and I have four great speakers or great guys that can answer questions, any tough questions as well. And that is in the morning. And then that's followed by the Veterans Luncheon. It's a World War II and Korean era luncheon, RSVP, and the veteran can bring a guest to the luncheon. But the idea of the luncheon was to give the veteran who's lost all their buddies through the sake of the era of time to rekindle a friendship with another veteran that they don't even know.
And absolutely. Often,
yeah, that's the beauty of the Veterans Lunch. That these guys are sitting next to each other. They can look at the badges that are custom made for each individual man. You know, it has their commendation ribbons on it, their name, their rank or rating, depending upon Army or Navy, their duties and what they did. So there's not a lot of questions that need to be bounced back and forth, because they could tell and read the badges and know what the guys had done. But it rekindles friendships or starts a friendship that in this late hour of life is so necessary for these guys. If you're 95 years old and your friends are gone, who do you talk to about these types of things that haunt you every day? And that I think is the beauty of the Veterans Luncheon. Following the Veterans Luncheon, if any veteran and their escort wants to go out on a Higgins boat, we'll take them out on Lake Erie and run them around. And, you know, you get a little bit of water, you know, splashing up, and it's safe and secure. Nothing's going to happen. And they enjoy themselves and have a great time. And that's followed by other speaking programs on Friday afternoon. And then there's two battles that take place at 3 and 5. And I'll be real brief on Saturday, because I know we're running out of time. On Saturday, there's a battle at 10 in the morning on a bridge. That's followed immediately by a Legion of Honor ceremony, where the French government is coming into Conneaut from Chicago to pin the French Legion of Honor. It's the highest medal that the French can bestow upon anyone, whether it be a citizen or combatant, that has done great deeds for France. That's at 11:30. That runs an hour. It's a beautiful ceremony. It's absolutely wonderful, and I encourage people to come to that. To me, that's the crown jewel of the event. And then at 3 o'clock is the... And there's a speaking program following that, and then the signature event, the amphibious landing at 3.
And that's all on Saturday, but the event is both Friday and Saturday, August 17th and 18th in Conneaut, Ohio, D-Day Conneaut. Eric, thank you so much for your service and what you're doing for our veterans, and thank you for what you've done these years, all the team there at D-Dot Conneaut, to bring honor and history to our veterans, and thank you so much for what you're doing.
You're quite welcome, Chris. Thank you for having me on today.
Absolutely. And I'll see you Saturday, sir. God bless you.
All righty. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Again, folks, visit D-Day Conneaut. Just Google that, D-Day Conneaut, and check out their website for all the times and events, and also our Facebook page at the Ohio Christian Alliance. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. God bless you, and remember to thank our veterans for their service.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, this has been a busy week here in Ohio at the Ohio State House and also in Washington, D.C. as news is really breaking left and right. For those of you that are a listener to this program, you know that we supported the Ohio Pastor Protection Act, House Bill 36, and we're urging calls to the Ohio legislature in support of this. Good news, it passed committee yesterday and today it passed on the Ohio House floor. It's now on to the Ohio Senate, and this was a bill that was stuck in committee for over a year. Dozens of pastors, clergy from across the state came in and testified in support of this legislation that protects religious freedom for pastors and churches, and we're glad and thankful that it is making its move through the Ohio legislature. More about that on our website. And of course, lots of breaking news all over at this time. We're going to be focusing on a promise that President Trump made to the Midwest and to Ohio and to West Virginia and to Pennsylvania, and that was to the coal miners. When he ran for office, he said that coal was going to make a comeback, and we're going to do for our coal miners. We're not going to leave them behind. 8 years of the war on coal has reaped devastation in these communities that actually kept the lights on for over a century all over America. And we were leaving them behind. And on the front end of that war was Mr. Bob Murray. And let us give them a proper introduction because we're going to kick off our roundtable discussion and a continuation of how the coal industry is doing in the Trump era. With me on the phone is Chairman and CEO of Murray Energy, Mr. Bob Murray. Also joining us is Jim Martin, Chairman of the 60 Plus Association, and Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Chris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Murray and Jim and Congressman. We're so glad that you've taken time to be with us. We know that, Congressman, you're in and out of votes as we speak on the floor. Thank you for joining us. Do you have a little time with us, Congressman?
It'll be spotty. It depends on what time they call votes. We're expecting votes here within the next 10 minutes or so, but I'll be with you as long as I can.
Okay, let's get right to a media clip with Mr. Murray on a recent broadcast.
The New York Times headline was false, a very poor headline. The article itself was not bad. I do want to correct what Tyler just said. I have never blasted the Trump administration or even criticized them. Indeed, I think he's done a wonderful job to assure low-cost electricity in America and to shore up the reliability of the electric power grid. Today, Angela Merkel announced that Germany is no longer going to close any more coal-fired plants. They need them. you have a power blackout right now in Las Vegas. It is true that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission failed to enact the immediate reforms necessary to ensure the reliability, resilience, and the security of the grid, but they were directed to do so by Secretary Perry, and that is the Trump administration. He has been very supportive of coal. A lot of it was low-hanging fruit in overturning these regulations, Contessa, because many of the Obama regulations were illegal, so they were very easy to overturn by executive order.
The New York Times got its hands on a letter that you had sent to the administration with sort of a wish list, a to-do list that would be important for the coal industry. And when you're looking through that, rolling back regulations, that got done. Overhauling who sits on the FERC commission, on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that got done. Four of those commissioners were Trump appointees. Unanimously, this commission voted against what would effectively subsidize coal and nuclear power. How does that sit with you?
That does not sit with me well. You see, windmills and solar panels are subsidized by the taxpayer, 30% production tax credit, and electricity from a windmill and a solar panel costs 26 cents a kilowatt hour. My coal-fired electricity costs 4 cents a kilowatt hour, and America needs it. There is bias among the two Democrats, Glick and LaFleur, on the FERC. They are obviously never going to support coal or nuclear power. The other two employees against, the chairman himself, McIntyre, and particularly Rob Paulsen, are wrong in their decision, and it needs to be overturned.
Well, you know, Mr. Murray, I thought you did a great job on that, by the way. Of course, it's a hostile environment with liberal media, but I thought it was great that you called out those people that are sitting on the federal FERC, because you see a lot of politics that's being played out in some of these agencies that have been obstructing the Trump administration's attempt to move forward with a solid energy policy going forward. Your thoughts, sir?
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Chris, is feckless. Absolutely feckless. It's more of the swamp that we've had in Washington, D.C. They fail to recognize that you cannot store sunshine, you cannot store wind, and you can't store natural gas at a power plant, but you can store coal and nuclear power. And let me tell you what they have done to America. We only had one cold snap this past winter in Ohio, December 27th to January 8th. And this will be very important to your listeners because their electric power supply is in jeopardy and they're paying a lot more for their electricity than they need to. So that is what Secretary Perry, with President Trump behind him, directed the FERC to address. They failed to do so. What happened during that cold snap between December 27th, January 8th? 2 million Americans in the PJM interconnection and in New York lost their electric power. 22 people died in these 12 days. That's the one cold snap we had. So the United States Department of Energy, National Energy Technology Laboratory, they call it, investigated the matter. What happened? Coal that had been supplying 29,000 megawatts a day during this period of time went to 46,000, supplied 89% of the electricity.
Yes.
Nuclear power supplied a small improvement. Windmills, the winds were up to 50 miles an hour. They provided zero electricity. The solar panels, it was cloudy, zero electricity. Natural gas said, well, we have 37,000 megawatts in reserve. They had zero because the gas pipelines to the power plants froze up and the gas could not be supplied. Plus, home heating took the precedence of what gas was available, so there was none available for these power plants. But coal stepped up with nuclear power and provided 89% of the power.
That's right.
In spite of that, the price of gas, what little gas there was, went from $3 a 1,000 cubic feet to $95 and over $175 in New York City. Electric power prices went to $500 a kilowatt hour during those 12 days. It normally costs $28 a kilowatt hour.
Right. And it was coal and nuke that carried the load during that cold snap. Now, Congressman Johnson, this hasn't gone without notice among your colleagues in Washington, has it?
No, it hasn't, Chris. We've had a number of hearings on energy and commerce. I've met personally with Secretary Perry, and you've already heard Mr. Murray talk about the support that the Secretary is giving and that the President are giving. I'm right there in lockstep. We've encouraged FERC to solve these problems. I've had personal conversations with the chairman of FERC about these issues, and other members have as well, and we will continue to address them. I think Mr. Murray, you know, makes a very valid point, and I've been saying this since 2011, and Bob has heard me say this many, many times. Wind and solar and alternative fuels, they're not going to be able to provide the baseload energy to our electric grid. We must continue to have coal as a part of our energy profile. And I knew back in 2014 that the Europeans were going back to coal-fired energy because they told us that in several countries when we took an energy and commerce trip over there to talk to the folks about energy. And I specifically asked them then because they had a goal, a stated goal to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030. And I said to the European Union energy minister, I said, how can you even think that you can accomplish that if you're going back to coal-fired energy? And now I was setting the stage for the question. I'm glad they're going back to coal-fired energy, but I was asking a question that I already knew the answer to. I said, because our president in the United States says we're going to reduce carbon emissions by only 30%, and in order to get there, he's shutting down the coal industry in our country. How are you guys going to reduce it by 40% by increasing your use of coal? And yet our nation, our president, says we've got to shut down coal in order to accomplish that. And he basically looked at me and said, you know, it's lip service. You know, that's our goal. But our ratepayers are no longer willing to pay the exorbitantly high price for electricity. So, no, it is not going unnoticed here, Chris. We are deeply engaged in this conversation.
Well, that's right. There's a lot of interest at the table, obviously. There's, you know, those from renewables, gas, coal, nuke, coming, and all those that represent them coming to the table. But what's actually important is that the Trump administration promised a solid energy policy going forward, not the nonsense that we've had to live under the last 8 years, which was really a war on coal, which was actually crippling the reliability of the grid. Congressman, I know that you were on committees about actually the national security concern about the reliability of the grid. And by the way, the grid is the national grid is pretty much a new phenomenon outside of around 1999, 2000 is when it came online. This group named PJM and all the readings that I've done here. So, Mr. Murray, there was a lot of gamesmanship going on at the beginning of the year. The Trump administration, through Mr. Perry and the Energy Department, were trying to put forward some policy. And then FERC, which is the Federal Regulatory Energy Commission, it's a bureaucratic panel. And basically, they rejected the suggestion. Even when this report that you were quoting came out where coal and nuke over-delivered during the cold snap, where gas underperformed and renewables were almost non-existent, not keeping the lights on in the East Coast, and a lot of that energy is coming out of the Midwest right here in Ohio and Pennsylvania and West Virginia. Your thoughts, sir?
And that cold snap that I referred to
earlier, 12 days, December 27th to January 8th of this year, coal saved $3.5 billion to the electric utility ratepayers in the PJM alone. That was $288 million a day to be there that we saved that couple on fixed incomes. That single mom or that manufacturer of a product who needs a lot of electricity and low-cost electricity to compete in the global marketplace. And this generation that stepped up during this cold snap is scheduled to all be closed.
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute because I want to talk to let Jim Martin come in here because he represents those on a fixed income with a 60-plus association. And, Jim, you've been monitoring this because you're advocating for seniors and those on a fixed income in their retirement years and how this is all going to play out for mom and dad who are basically trying to live out the remainder of their years and live on the income that they raised over their lives. Your thoughts, Jim Martin?
Well, first of all, let me thank Bob Murray and Bill Johnson. They touched upon the situation here with FERC. And by the way, those two Democrats, Glick and O'Fleur, they never were with us. But thank goodness the president has gone over their head. And Bob, he has done what he said. He promises made, promises kept. He's kept his promise to you. And just in the last 2 weeks, though, despite President Trump's leadership to address the urgency of doing something about coal and nuclear plants, that impact our national security. And that's what it's all about. It is about national security. And Bob Murray, you've been bringing to everybody's attention. But what you're up against is this resist movement out there with these wacky enviros and their friends in the liberal media. And they're trying to discredit the president and you. They're trying to really continue the war on coal. They've now added the nuclear industry. And by the way, you said it best, Bob, when you said it's a bureaucratic cop-out, I think, by FERC. And I've been quoting you in other talk shows, Bob, if you don't mind. I see that, as Bob Murray has said, if it were not for the electricity generated by our nation's coal-fired and nuclear power plants, we would be experiencing massive brownouts and even blackouts in the country. And again, coal. King coal has far outperformed all these other fuel sources. And Bob Murray so aptly puts it, you can't store sunshine. So this is a war going on out there. And yes, I've got so many seniors. 60 plus has got, we represent more voters, more consumers, more users, more beneficiaries than any of these companies and these enviros out there and a bunch of trade associations. With us on this issue, we've got seniors all over the country. They depend on the electricity sources that are reliable and affordable.
And affordable.
And again, as Bob pointed out earlier, the price of natural quintupled. It went so far out of sight. It added to the cost of electricity humongously, as Bob has pointed out. This is a war going on here with you. Bill Johnson is your best advocate, Mr. Murray, if you don't know that, here on Capitol Hill. And by the way, I think they're going to move it out of the Energy Committee, maybe into the Senate Armed Services Committee. If they do, guess what? With the illness of John McCain, the chairman now of Armed Services again is none other than Senator Jim Inhofe. And he is a strong advocate for what we all believe in, plus the fact that he is such a strong advocate of Scott Pruitt. And I put out a press release the other day about Scott. And the reason the Democrats want Scott Pruitt's head is because he took an action to undo all the tremendous harm done by the radicals in the previous administration. So we've got our work cut out for us.
Well, that's right. And we do have our work cut out for us in keeping the momentum going. Now, Mr. Murray, you said just before Jim weighed in about advocating for the seniors that all of this energy, this generation is happening right here in the Midwest. And of course, First Energy, which makes Akron in Northeast Ohio its home and headquarters, they fought the war on coal with you because they, more than any other energy company in the country, was 70% coal generation. They have nuke plants within their line of energy plants, of course, two here in Ohio, one over there, one or two over in Pennsylvania. And yet, First Energy Solutions announced bankruptcy. And so this is actually presenting a challenge and a problem and actually a crisis, because you're talking about two major nuke plants, the ones that kept the lights and the energy going into the eastern seaboard during the cold snap. And then those coal plants along the Ohio River, they're the ones who delivered the energy. Congressman, we got a problem here.
Chris, I hate you. You're right. We do, and I'm that's why I continue to have conversations with the secretary, with the president, and with FERC. And with that, Chris, I hate to cut my time short. They have just called votes. I've got to run over to the House floor. Count me in. I'm still the champion for coal, Mr. Murray. I look forward to seeing you again soon, Jim. Always good to hear from you.
God bless you, Congressman. Thank you.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
This is Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance, with an election announcement. On Tuesday, August 7th, a special election is being held for the 12th Congressional District. This election is taking place due to the fact that the seat was vacated earlier this year. The Ohio Christian Alliance has produced an educational voter guide. Vote your values and vote August 7th in the 12th Congressional Special Election. To view and print the voter guide, log on to our website at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. That was Congressman Bill Johnson joining us this afternoon. He is in and out of floor votes on the House floor in the U.S. Congress. And we're continuing our discussion with Mr. Murray of Murray Energy and Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association. I'm your host, Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Mr. Murray, there's a lot we need to get to here, because we've covered so many areas over the last couple of years and all the challenges that you were facing, obviously, in the coal industry. One of them was the delivery of the rail, the rail lines basically were holding up coal shipments. When you talk about a war on coal, literally, when you talk about supply chain and you're talking about delivery and, an air campaign, you were doing it all. And then here to find out that the rail lines were backloading coal shipments. Has there been an improvement there, sir?
Not a bit. The Congress created the problem with the railroads by giving them monopolies when they broke up Conrail and other railroads. There are only basically five major railroads now in the United States of America. And Congress gave them a region for the country where they have a monopoly. They're poorly managed. They're run by their unions. They're very inefficient. To stay in business in the coal industry, which is vital to the state of Ohio, we've had to export our coal. We'll export 22.5 million tons of coal around the world because they still want our coal. They know it's lower cost by 1/7 of a solar panel, and it's 1/4 the cost of electricity from natural gas, and the gas isn't even available in most regions of the world. But we can't get it out of the country because of the inefficient, the most inefficient thing in America is the federal government. Next to it is a railroad. but they've been given a monopoly. They're supervised, supposedly, by the Surface Transportation Board, which has really become a tool of the railroad themselves. The government has, again, been feckless in overseeing how the railroads are operated. So we have these customers around the world wanting our coal, and we can't get it out of the country because of the terrible railroad service. Half the trucks on these highways, or more than that, wouldn't be there if the railroads were efficient in hauling the products that these trucks do.
Well, that, you know, that's an issue we're going to have Congressman Johnson back on about. I know he had to run, but I agree with you. You know, they were talking at the Transportation Committee today down there at the Ohio State House of basically computerized trucking. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be next to one of those. I mean, I've already seen those headless Uber driver crashes and things like that. It's ridiculous. And it goes back to, we've got good infrastructure in this country, but it's being mismanaged. I'm going to bank that Mr. Trump is going to make sure that things get done along those lines, and that we're going to see a renovation of our infrastructure, including railways. And God bless you, sir, for all you're doing.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you, and we'll be watching very closely as what Mr. Perry is going to release, and we'll have you back on the program to discuss that. Thanks, Mr. Murray.
Thank you.
God bless. That was Mr. Murray, who is the chairman and CEO of Murray Energy. And, of course, if you missed any of today's program, you can listen to it in its entirety on our website at ohioca.org. Also, if you need an update on the news items of this week, also available on our website at ohioca.org. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.